Yo, what's up, guys? JB here. Today is Saturday, the 6th of June, 2009. As it is Saturday, I have just returned from the second time I've seen the movie The Hangover. And last night, I was at Luke Germain's opening night performance here in Las Vegas, which was great. We'll get into that on another podcast. Tonight is about another Luke. And tonight we did a roundtable discussion where you guys were able to ask any question you wanted in the forums. Any question you wanted to post. I think we had a limit of like 3 questions per member, and we've got around 10 pages of questions to go through now, and I've got Mr. Luke Dancy. Luke Dancy is on the phone, I believe, right now. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. What's up, dude?
What's shaking?
Just got back from a busy day of working on the next season, and just going to relax for a little bit and have a nice chat with you. It's going to be fun.
Luke and I are in the same city right now, about 10 minutes away from each other, but we're on the phone.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, right?
Brilliant. So, yeah. But yes, Luke has been busy. I know you guys started working on the next season. What was it? Yesterday, the day before that, right? Something.
Yeah, pretty much the start of this week. We jump back into this is like our 1 week of pre-production, and then next week we actually start shooting. So, and we actually had the new store opening today over at the Circus Circus. So that was a bit of chaos too, but it was good. It looks really good. That's I think that store is. It's bigger than the one at the Luxor, and it was Chris did a signing, so it was really crazy over there. So
good. We'll get into like the specifics of how that whole relationship started and where that's at right now in a bit. So I'm going to try to find a good question that you guys asked in the forums as a good starter, and I think the most obvious question, just so you guys, so for those of you that are new to Luke's work and who he is a question submitted by CoolerDude0410, which is my nickname in middle school, and he asks... who or what inspired you to get into magic? So what's your basic story? How'd you end up here now?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I pretty much got into magic the same way a lot of people did. It's kind of like a broken record. I saw Copperfield on TV back when I was about 8 years old. I believe it was the building implosion he did in Charlotte, which is actually funny because I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I had no clue that they were taping something like that in the city. I'm not sure they wanted to let it out anyway, but and then, you know, later on I found out, you know, after the show that it was actually taped in Charlotte. Pretty much after that special, I got more and more involved in magic. And it's funny because I started around age eight, and then I found out when I was around 13 that my great-grandfather was a magician too in Michigan. So I guess that kind of stuff's in my blood. So it's a funny coincidence how that all worked out. But yeah, good question, and I hope that answers everything there.
This is jumping around. These questions are obviously in no order because they're from several different members. The only order I'm going in is kind of chronological order of as they were posted. It's a good question. We'll get into the whole how you got started with Chris a little later in this, but he's asking, since you obviously are working a lot with magic on television, are there any things to keep in mind when showing a magic trick on television? Do certain tricks work better than others, and why?
Well, I mean, of course, the obvious thing is when you're live performing for someone, there's you have the misdirection available to you. You know, it's much harder to fool the TV because the camera doesn't blink, and the camera doesn't look away when you want it to look away. So it's not so much that it's different in the respect that you use different. It's a weird place. It's weird. It's a really weird place because and when you're live, you use misdirection in one way, where you have people look where you want them to look, and you say things to get them to act the way you want them to. On TV, you have to force them to do what you want them to do in another way. So you have to use the cameras and all that in another way, not necessarily with like tricks and stuff. Don't get me wrong, camera tricks or anything like that. But you have to use misdirection in another way for television. So it is kind of a sticky area in the middle because it's misdirection live and it's misdirection for TV. And you have to remember that it's much, much more difficult to fool a viewer at home because, for one, you can, and I know a lot of people do this with YouTube already, I mean, you can obviously record it and watch it back a million times to try to figure it out, and we realize that when we're working on this stuff. And also, the stuff for TV has to be much more visual because you want to get crazy reactions from people, because if they don't react openly and crazy, then you don't know that they're impressed. So you have to make the magic that much more impossible looking as well to get the reaction, because the reactions are what play to TV. And you know, when you're a person doing match for someone, and I do something that blows your mind away, you could sit there and be stumped and just not say anything. But if we have that same kind of reaction when we're taping for, you know, the show, it looks like it just fell flat and it doesn't play well. So the match needs to be not only stronger, but it needs to be visual and cool for everybody. So that's another thing, needs to be visual so that people at home can see what's going on.
I feel like another point is, you know, that it has to not necessarily, I don't know if simpler is the right word for it, but, you know, when you're performing live for someone, you can do a 10-minute set and have this recurring theme or recurring action during that set, and that's building and building and building. Where it's on TV, someone might have just tuned in. You can't really have that long build or that long arc, you know, before an effect crescendos or whatever the climax of the effect is.
Well, that's a great point because, I mean, of course, people's attention span, when you're performing for them live and they're paying you, they have to watch you and they want to watch you because they're paying you. When you're on TV, you know, people can obviously just take the remote and just click to the next channel if they want. So you're right, JB, man. You definitely have to capture their attention, and you have to make the magic play quick, and you can't just go on and on and then get into it. And that's a very good point. You're absolutely right.
So there's a delicate mix between it being visual, it being simple enough to play to the camera so people at home can understand it, and then et cetera. Looking elsewhere in this thread, there's a question submitted by A. Johnson. He's based in Manchester in the United Kingdom. And
cool.
He's asking, we see this question a lot when we do these. It's always interesting to see how different artists respond to it. How do you practice is basically what he's asking. His question says, do you have any specific daily routine to keep on top of your game? Or do you just perform? And some people just practice through performance. Or do you have some set routine of how you keep your things polished?
Well, honestly, like with my schedule now, there is no everyday thing that I can do because it's crazy busy. Normally, though, the way I love to practice is with music. For some reason, and I know a lot of people do this too, I love to have some cool music in the background playing because it gets me in this groove. It's almost like it inspires me, and I've come up with so much like crazy stuff when I have music on. It's just like it automatically inspires me to things just start to click. So that's kind of, it's not a daily routine because sometimes you're not able to force creativity, which is what I like to do. I like to continue to push myself to come up with new stuff. And JB knows this because the times that I've sat with the guy, the poor guy, I feel so bad for him. I overload him with material because I've got so much crap floating around in my head. And it's a good thing to try to, I have a notebook, and I'll focus in on like, I have like four sections in the notebook. And I'll focus in on one set, I guess I'll call it a set, then I'll play some music, and I'll go through that. And then I'll do the next day, and the next day, and the next day. So I have a constant thing, a constant flow of magic that I'm working on, and that's how I do it. Usually music helps. So, that works.
There's a good question submitted by Sean Raff. It's post number 12. He's also based in the UK. He's asking, what's your favorite magic-related book that you find yourself keep going back to and why? As a parallel to that, is there a specific type, we haven't touched on this yet, is there a specific type of magic that piques your interest or genre of magic that piques your interest more than others? So what do you use as your inspiration? What has been inspirational books and stuff for you? Where do you get that vibe from?
Well, a really good book that I go back to a lot. I have two answers for that, really. One really good book that I love to death because I'm a big fan of his work is The Classic Magic of Larry Jennings. Larry was a really, really good magician. He had really, really good ideas. And the material that he has, not a lot of people do. You don't see it a lot. Like, I do a lot of stuff with his rhythm count that a lot of people don't even know what the hell the count is. And to me, it's some stuff that a lot of people should. I think that because so much new stuff comes out now, a lot of the older guys kind of get, you know, looked over. Their work gets looked over, which is a shame because a lot of it is the foundation for what we work with today. Something else I go back to all the time. It's something really hard to get your hands on, and I know everyone's going to start looking for this now. Is a magazine set that used to come out called The Trap Door. A guy named Steve Beam from North Carolina, which is where I'm from. He released a set of these magazines for years and years. I can't tell you from which year it ran until now. I can't tell you. It doesn't run anymore, but it ran for like, I don't know, between 5 and 10 years. And he's got some of the best magic I've ever read. And I go back to that from time to time because there's such a wide variety of material in there. So the Classic Magic of Larry Jennings is my favorite book. I go back to it all the time. But I also love to dip into the trapdoor because it's such a fun read. There's such fun stuff in there. So that's the first part of the question. What was the second part?
It really wasn't in that question specifically, but just for the sake of these guys knowing, is there a specific style of magic that really you find yourself drawn to, or you know, a specific style that you constantly work to create, or are you kind of all over the place and like cards and coins and this and that and everything?
Well, I'm pretty much I'm a card geek, I guess is the right way. I love card magic. I used to go to the, there's a group of guys I used to hang out with all the time. There was a website called The Second Deal, and we had conventions every year, and we had one year in Chicago. It was a tribute to Ed Marlowe, and it was outstanding. There were card guys like Bill Malone was there, Simon Harris and John Fan, and the list goes on. So I'm a big card freak, and I love card magic. That's fun, though, and it's visual, and it's, I like different, interesting plots. I don't just, like, trip at the car and I'm going to find it. I like, I guess the way I like card magic is it'd be fun. You know, fun for people to watch and fun for people to perform, too. So that's kind of like the style I like. Now, the other type of magic that I really, really love is situational stuff. And that's kind of what I like to bring to the table when I'm not doing card magic. I have a lot of really strange situational kind of pieces that are organic, have a kind of an organic feel. So I love that style of magic, too, where, like, you're out to eat and you pick up something on the table and just you do magic with something on the table or just a random object that, you know, an everyday object. I love that kind of stuff, too, almost more than card magic because it's stuff that people really remember. So I really love that stuff, too.
This next question kind of jumps around. It's a different topic. This is posted by Copperfield14. Pretty sure it's not the real David Copperfield. It's not the real one, but he's a different one. He's in Glendale, California. The post number is 20. What are your views on YouTube magic is what he's asking. And we had one of the Circa Trova posts in the forums. I think the topic for May was all about YouTube and the advantages and disadvantages of it, what it allows magicians to do, which, you know, I think is fairly obvious. It's a way for magicians to come together and share their what they're working on and basically bring a new audience into magic, just lay people that see magic on YouTube and are exposed to it, but also talking about the bad things. So what's your general consensus on YouTube? What are the pros and cons in your mind? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, like, first of all, I hate to miss that discussion because it is a good one. I hate him coming to this late. Here's my views on that, and it's pretty simple. I think it's a great medium, you know, for us to share our magic with each other. The only problem is it almost feels like we should keep the post to where they're not public to other people.
Just watching what you post, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, a big problem is, you know, and even you guys, the Theory 11 stuff, it's outstanding. It's like someone will buy a trick, and then for some reason they're so excited to show it on YouTube to just random people. But in the process, a lot of the times, because they want to do it so quick, they're giving away the trick, which I don't understand, because if you spend your hard-earned money to buy a trick, why do you want to go and show people basically how it works? You know, put in the work and then show it. Honestly, I don't know why people want to go online anyway and show off magic that's not theirs. Like, what? I don't know why I would want to go online and show you a trick that's not my trick. Like, what's the point of that? That part I don't get. I think it's a good way, though, to take tricks from other people, to practice them, and use other magicians as feedback. The only problem, though, is, you know, when you post something to YouTube, for the most part, unless you have a membership list, the sign-up thing, you're getting feedback from not only magicians, but laymen. And, I mean, it's basically, a lot of them end up being a teaching session for laymen to see how the stuff's done, which isn't very good. So I think we should use it in a more respectable way, because our art form is so accessible now, and the creators like myself, the more that the stuff gets revealed, the more likely we are to hold back in the future, because we know what's going to happen to the material. And honestly, when it's released at the rate that it is now on YouTube, people keep showing how stuff's done, it's really hard for us behind the scenes to come up with stuff for you guys as quickly as you're giving it away. It's like you want to take something, and then it's out there, and then you expect us to have the next thing ready for you to start performing after that. And after a while, man, we're not going to be able to keep up with the rate of people doing that. And that scares me, because I don't want to see magic turn into just people doing bad magic all the time. So, that, you know, it's good and bad, just like everyone will tell you. It's good and bad.
I think you have to, you know, you mentioned what's the inspiration behind why someone posts something or a video on YouTube. And I think you have to divide that into two types of people. One is the people that make a video on YouTube just to show their layman friends of, watch this cool trick I can do. And it's basically an extension of, you know, buying a trick in a magic shop, performing it for your friends at school or whatever. And they're doing that online because, you know, people are friends now with people in more places, and YouTube's a good way to share that. And then there's the separate group of magicians that are working on an effect and then post it on YouTube that they're working on this, or they just learned this, and they're basically having the audience of magicians. So I think either way, though, you have to really try to be objective with yourself and have you put in enough time on working on that effect. And then as a side note to that, aside from even creating magic, you have to watch what you post. You know, if you're watching another magician's video and you write, you know, oh, it was good, except for I saw the double lift at 36 seconds and I also saw the blah, 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 yeah, flash. You just have to watch what you say, because YouTube is not a magic forum. There's layman on there. So it's like going to another magician's show and yelling out how things work while they're still performing. You have to kind of respect the territory and the medium that you are residing in, I think.
And, you know, it also really breaks my heart as a creator that people want to go online and for some reason do nothing but a video teaching you how the tricks are done. Like, obviously you got into magic because you like it and you think it's cool. So what does getting into magic and learning how to do stuff have to do with teaching people how to do stuff? That's the part that I don't understand as a creator, because, you know, you're basically just taking someone's stuff and just giving it away. And I don't know why people think they have the right to do that. Because just because you buy a trick doesn't mean that you can tell the whole world how it's done. I mean, that's silly. And honestly, that's why a lot of people now are jacking up the prices on their tricks, or they're not showing how the stuff is done, because, or teaching it or giving it away, because people just, the magic seems like now it's lost its value. You know, the secret is what the value is. Once you have the idea out there, you know, everyone can come up with their own method to do it. So once a trick is out there, it's not even just the secret that's out there. It's just an idea. People can take that and run with it. And I've seen people put so many different versions of my tricks on YouTube, too. And it's sad, because none of them have come to me and said, hey, look at this. You know, it's like I'm having people tell me, hey, look, did you see this new version of your trick? Or this? And it's like, what are you talking about? You know, it'd be nice if those people, if they're going to share it with the rest of the world, share it with the creators, too. And go to them first. You know, and talk to them, and then share your stuff. But I just don't understand all that, man. The whole tutorial thing, I don't get. I just don't get that.
I think it's, you know, it's kind of an empowerment thing. Look what I know, and look what I can share with you, and look how smart I am. Even though it's not their effect, and not their creation, and not their ingenuity that created it, it's still an empowerment thing. If you can, I can show this to someone else, and but they don't understand that thousands of people can see that, and what that does, and how that feels to someone that's a creator. That, A, you know, that effect is their baby. They, you know, they either created that in a moment of brilliance, or they worked on that for years and years and years. And this is someone that's giving it away that A, doesn't have the right to. B, that creator, that artist might, you know, a lot of times, especially with the guys that we work with on our site, that's their livelihood. So you're literally giving away something that their family or them depends on. That's their work. They sit in rooms and they read and they create and they, you know, tinker with things, and that's what they do. Anyway, I think we're both worked up about that one, but I think we got, you know, you get the point. It's a very it's dangerous waters, and I think that people should think more before they act, especially in an open kind of open system as YouTube is. Next question I'm reading is from Demon 5 Magic. It's post number 26. This is jumping back to the subject of genres of magic, but he's asking, do you think it's more important for a magician to be well-rounded in all types of magic, or to specialize and focus on one type that may interest you specifically?
You know, a lot of that, and I'll try to make this quick because I rambled on the last one. I think a lot of it depends on your character. I mean, the character you're trying to portray. You know, if you are, let's just say you're a computer engineer by trade, you know, it would make a lot of sense to stick with, if that's your personality and your character, trying to stick with routines that are based around that. As far as if it hurts your magic if you do a lot of it, nah. I mean, you can be a jack of all trades. You know, it's good to know a little bit of everything, because sometimes I just get tired of seeing one card trick after another and after another. And a lot of times people just feel like it's just the same thing. So I think it's good to be well-rounded and to know a little bit of everything. And also, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a good basic foundation of magic knowledge, because you can take a lot of the techniques and apply them to other forms of magic too, and that's kind of what I'm doing now with my stuff. So you know, I think it's good to know a little bit of everything. It can't hurt, that's for sure.
There's another question I see by a username, True2Coins, the digit 2. It's post number 33. What kind of preparation do you prefer when adding an effect to your repertoire of effects? What makes an effect worthy of performance? So what's your kind of creative process when, I think is what he's asking, from, you know, thinking of an effect to it being ready for performance, or learning an effect if it's not yours and having it ready for performance?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, first of all, if something's not broken, I don't fix it. You know, if my act I feel is okay, I'll leave it alone. But if something really jumps out at me, then I'll consider the place, if it would fit better somewhere else. Is that kind of where you're going? If you're already doing stuff, why should you add something new to the act? Is that kind of what this is about?
Well, I think he was asking, you know, let's say you learn an effect, you learn the method. What is your kind of creative process from having a technique to developing that into a performance-ready piece? Do you practice it yourself, or do you practice it for your friend? How does that whole process work?
Well, you know, it's good to start off with the basic presentation, you know, figure out the way you want to present it, and then just start practicing the effect. You know, a really good thing that a lot of people don't take the time to do is tape yourself doing a trick, but don't post it on YouTube. Tape yourself doing something and just watch it yourself and see what you look like doing the trick. Do you look natural doing it? Do you look relaxed? Is it part of your character? Does it fit you? And it also doesn't hurt to do a trick. Let's say your character is a cool hip guy. Let's say you dress up like that and you do the trick. You wear your normal clothes. Then say you dress up in a suit and do it. It's funny because you can see the two different ways that the trick looks. You can do it when you're yourself, and you can do it when you're someone else. And you can actually see the way whether or not the trick will fit you. Because if it fits you either way, then it's a good trick. But if it only fits your one character, then you know whether you should do it for yourself and for your friends, or if you can use it for everything. I know that's kind of a generalized thing, but it really helps to. I would say just tape yourself doing stuff and don't share it with people, and you can learn that way. That's a really good way to learn.
I'm jumping around a little bit. Jumping around. There's a question. It's kind of interesting, slightly open-ended. Question from Vague Theory. This is post number 43. What do you see in today's magic society that is different than that of the past? Is there anything about today's magic, the modern magic community, that you think is inspiring? What do you think of the pitfalls of that? And I think that's what he's asking.
Well, I mean, the obvious answer to that is, it seems like people now want instant gratification. You know, they want to be, most people I see now, they don't want to put the work into the stuff. They just want to be instantly gratified. They want people to tell them how great they are without really spending the time and the effort to be great. If you're good and you have the stuff that people like, then they will know who you are because your stuff is good. That's my biggest issue with magic today. Is everyone thinks they're entitled to being the next great thing, and everyone's not, because some people work harder than others, and you will see that when the final result comes out. And there's also, of course, the obvious thing with everyone and their mother now is putting out product, and that's, you know, it's because it's so much more accessible now. And the problem with that is, you know, you're not able now to filter out the good stuff from the bad stuff, and it hurts the magic market, too, because when you have so much stuff, how do you really truly know what's good and what's not? Because you have to filter through so much stuff, and a lot of good stuff is lost in the mix, too, because it's not so-called popular. And I think that's hurt magic, too. That's a big change. Is back in the day, there used to be a new book printed every few months. Now there's a new book or new DVD out every week, multiple DVDs or books. So that's been a big, big change.
Jumping to Mind Freak Land, because we haven't touched on it yet. Question by Lux Fair, LuxFerre, post number 47. How did you become a consultant for Criss Angel? What's the gist of the story of how you went from North Carolina to living 10 minutes away from us in Vegas?
North Carolina, yeah, I started there. And I wasn't too far from you, man, over there in Charleston. Yeah. Actually, I was sitting around one day, working on some stuff, and my cell phone rang and didn't recognize the number, so I didn't catch it. And I listened to a voicemail. It was Chris. I was working on a few projects of my own and talking very closely with Tim Trano over at Murphy's. And Tim knew I had a bunch of material that I've been wanted to release eventually. So we were talking out some different plans for that and how to do it. And I was also talking about working for another television show at the time. I won't name the name, but it's pretty obvious. And he said, actually, you know, would you be interested in working with Chris? And I said, sure. You know, it sounds like a fun thing to do. And so then, like, the next day, Chris called me, and we talked on the phone for about an hour. And he flew me out to Vegas the first time for a week, and we kind of did brainstorming, and he wanted to see what I was all about. You know, it's kind of like a job interview, a fun job interview. And we hung out and talked. You know, he got my style figured out, if it was going to fit or not. I flew home after the week, and I waited about 2 weeks, and then I got the phone call, and they said, we want you on for season 4, which was a lot of fun. And then after that, Chris decided he wanted to keep me around. I feel very fortunate for that, and I'm now here for season 5 and other ventures as well. So that's the gist of that.
And you guys just finished, you just started filming for season 5, right? That was this past week. So that's just getting rolling.
Well, I was here last summer pretty much putting together all the magic, close-up magic. I'm on an illusion guy. Putting together all the close-up magic for 5. This week, our production crew is actually here in Vegas now. They got here this week. And we've been getting those bills rolling now. So we're kind of... we've been communicating with them, so we're all on the same page. And then next week, starting Monday or Tuesday, we start shooting. So it's going to be a crazy schedule with him performing his live show and all that stuff. But I'm no part of that. I'm just part of the TV show. That's pretty much all that.
We got time for about one or two more questions. I'm trying to find some really gems that are ones we didn't get to towards the end of this thread. One of them I see by Zach Monkey, his post number 68. I like this a lot. This is the thing I find myself talking about with magicians almost every day. I just talked to Luke Germain about this because I had just come from his show last night, and he was asking me what I thought of the show, so I was giving him my completely unfiltered a thought on it, and that was that I was ridiculously entertained by his show. He was just a good performer, and I was entertained. So Zach's question here, which is the same question I was talking about with Luke last night, was in magic, what is more important for you, amazement or entertainment? Obviously, there's a balance, but what do you find yourself focusing more on? What's your general vibe on that question?
I'm going to go for the latter of the two and say entertainment. You know, pretty much we're entertainers. You know, we're not amazers, we're entertainers. And it's, you know, it's pretty simple, too, because if people don't like you, they could give it, you know, they could care less what you're doing, or if you amaze them or not. Because I've seen a lot of magicians that maybe they're entertaining, but they're brash, and they almost have an air of, like, an ego when they're performing, where they'll amaze the audience, but they do it in such a way that it's like they feel empowered, like, I just fooled you. And it's almost like a slap in the face. Like, I've seen so many guys do that, where they try to fool the crap out of people, but they don't worry about whether the people like them or not. They don't care. They care about more about themselves than they do their audience, which is so backwards. So I think it's more about the entertainment, because we are entertainers, once again, and it's our job to make sure people have a good time. But, I mean, the truth of it is, if people don't like you, they're not going to like anything you do. So you got to get them to like you first, and that's part of being an entertainer, you know, is having people like you. So, yeah, I think it's entertainment, sure.
It's a good question for us to end on. I think that was a good one. We got to post this in a few minutes, so I was just going to say before we head out, we have got some more stuff from Luke that's going to be posted over the next few days, and also we're going to be posting the Circa Trova topic for this month in a few minutes. So if you've made it this far in the podcast, check the Circa Trova forum probably around the time where you're listening to me talking right now, and you should see it posted. So definitely chime in on that and check it out. And we'll have a lot more from Luke very soon on the site, so be sure to stick around for it. And I want to thank Luke for answering all the questiones tonight. So that's all we got. We'll chat with you guys soon. Thanks again, Luke. Any last final words, final thoughts?
you know, pretty much good. Thank you, though.
Awesome. All right, we'll chat with you guys soon.